Welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. This podcast is brought to you in association with Game Refinery. Join us as we uncover the latest trends in mobile game design.
Hello and welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. Thanks for tuning in for another episode. This is a podcast that provides insights into what makes a great mobile game, what is and isn't working for designers at the moment, and some of the key trends we're seeing in mobile game design globally. So we're kicking off. We're into 2021. We're there with our first podcast of the year. It's going to be a good one, I know. And we're going to talk with the Game Refinery team about what we think is going to be happening broadly and going into some specific kind of genres and thinking about some of the changes that might be happening. I'm your host, John Jordan. And joining me this week is Calle Heikkinen. How's it going?
Very well. Thanks for asking. How about you?
Yeah, not bad at all. Not bad at all. We have Erno Kiiski, who is the US senior analyst. How's it going?
Hi, it's good. It's good. Thank you.
And we also have Wilhelm Voutilainen, who is also a US senior analyst. How's it going, Wilhelm?
Yeah. Hi, all good as well.
Good. Excellent. Everyone's raring to go. I guess as we can say for the last time, 2020 was a strange year for many things. And for that, generally a good year for the games industry. So we're seeing various kind of reports, people are doing their estimates now, but looking like game revenue might be up anything up to 25%. So lots of people have been playing games more and spending more in games. A broad question to kind of kick us off. Do we think that kind of velocity of growth is going to continue in 2021, that people will have a new habit of playing games and mobile games in particular? Or do we see 2021 as being, you know, a bit more kind of normal sort of level of growth?
Well, if I start off, I would say that, of course, looking at 2020 and the whole pandemic situation and everything, it's really hard to kind of like compare to any other years that we are seeing or looking at the growth of different games and stuff like that. It's really hard to compare. And then, of course, if the vaccinations and stuff like that kicks in and we get a much more normal year in 2021, it's going to be really interesting to follow that. What's the trend going on in mobile games? But personally, I don't see the same level of growth still continuing because of course the extra boost that the COVID and quarantines and everything gave to everything basically. So people having much more time and not doing much more else. So personally, my assumption is that most likely there's still, like, there has been all the time there is some growth, but I don't see the same level continuing in similar manner as it was in this year.
I totally agree with what Erno said, and maybe what I would add to that is that it's probably going to be interesting to see also geographically how the situation will develop. Because, for example, as we all know, for example, in China, things have normalized at least up to some degree already in terms of the COVID situation there. And when we're going to get the vaccination and things will start to stabilize in Western markets as well, it's going to be interesting to see that, for example, if it will take more time in the US for things to get normal than in Europe, is there going to be big differences in growth in these two different regions?
Yeah, I agree with that, with the guys here. But personally, I'm really interested in seeing, we have lots of interesting games for example, these PC IPs, more and more coming to mobile. It's really interesting if those games are able to pull more PC gamers and console gamers to mobile. And yeah.
Yeah, one thing actually, if you're talking about genres, that I would like to mention is that personally, I don't see, if the quarantine and everything goes back to normal, personally, I believe that the games like Among Us, for example, the huge virality that they had, that kind of level of huge viral hits, I don't see happening because of the, of course, the social aspect that game, for example, had. So that's also one thing.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, I think generally what seems to happen in not just in these kind of real world events, but in general, when you have a big increase in activity around some sort of a kind of game or product or whatever, then that is clearly unsustainable. It drops back down, but it's always at a kind of a higher level than you saw before. And some of the new behavior, some people who have this new kind of behavior get quite engaged in that. So I kind of think it will be interesting. It won't be probably spread broadly across all genres like we saw before, I think. And I guess maybe we'll see when people are able to go out more, we'll maybe see a couple of months of kind of quite low kind of growth, quite low engagement relative with mobile games, because everyone will be finally out and enjoying the outside. I guess that would probably be a good thing for most people's well-being. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see. So I think one of the trends, well, we're going to go through kind of some genres now, I think, and one that's really been, you know, that's kind of mobile games have kind of brought it to the highest level ever, is kind of Match 3. There's just something very kind of mobile friendly about Match 3. But over the previous kind of years, we've seen this quite a lot of very interesting design evolution and even revolution, perhaps, around how you take this very engaging gameplay mechanic and how you build other things around it. So what do we think about Match 3? Do we see this innovation continuing? Where's it going? What are the key kind of products to be looking out for?
Yeah, if I start on this topic. So if we look at the Match 3 market now, so of course, especially in the West and in the US, it's the biggest subgenre in the market, making a bit over 20% of the revenues in US iOS, as an example. And it has been, of course, it's been evolving constantly, and the biggest evolvement evolving things that we saw have seen in last couple of years have been, for example, of course, Playrix came with the Match 3 games with the meta layer on top of the actual core gameplay, so their Gardenscapes and Homescapes, and that basically that model, and then after that we saw millions of copies from that kind of a model. Then a little bit later on, we saw, for example, these home design games, so Home Design Makeover and Property Brothers from Storm 8. Those were kind of like a new type of wave of Match 3 games. And now I would say the latest iteration of this, we saw a couple of weeks ago, this game called Project Makeover was launched, which is basically a game which combines the home design element from the Home Design Makeover, and then it combines that with this look makeover, so you kind of like put makeup on people and choose clothes and stuff like that. And then there's also the narrative thing that combines that together. So this kind of like a new type of meta layer, but it uses the similar kind of like a approach of completing levels, getting stars from levels, then choosing from 3 to 4 options as Gardenscapes and Homescapes did. But now when Project Makeover was launched and they had this kind of like a new approach, new combination of stuff, new team, they went straight away up to the top crossing 20, for example, in the US. Of course, good to remember, it's from the same development team as Matchington Mansion, which is also a really successful Match 3 game. So there's a lot of muscle behind the team. But looking at that kind of success and that kind of new type of meta that we saw Project Makeover use, it's going to be interesting to see that what are the kind of like the next steps on there, because what we have seen in the Match 3 market, there has been so many guys and companies trying to copy, for example, the Gardenscapes model, and a couple have been successful, like actually matching the mansion. But it's going to be interesting to see what kind of things we're going to see in the future, and what kind of meta layers companies can come up with, because to be honest, Project Makeover, it's really well made, but it's quite a simple twist, but it brings totally a new layer of gameplay to the genre. And it, based on the early success, it has been really, really successful. But then again, if you look at the innovation of, for example, On the another side, so we saw Heyday Pop, which was a soft launch game from Supercell. They tried to innovate on the meta side as well. So they had this kind of like a free-form farm building where you are building your farm, stuff like that. Very battle pass focused progression. So you had a battle pass and you progress on that, and then you get buildings and then you put them on your farm and stuff like that. But they didn't, for example, have any narrative. And now it didn't pass the Supercell standards, and they killed the game. So those are a couple things to be seen or like followed. So Project Makeover as an example of combining these casual game genres in its meta. So I don't know, let's say, do we see next like match three puzzle game that uses let's say MasterChef IP, and then you are making a MasterChef episodes in the meta or something like that. So it's going to be interesting to follow.
Okay, so my two cents to discussion is that obviously I'm looking at these games, talking about Project Makeover, through my China lenses. And my take on this is that if there are still people who think that Chinese companies do only mid-core stuff, now it's really time to wake up. Like, I do think that this is just the beginning of getting more Asian, especially Chinese, developed casual games to the Western markets. And we actually don't talk enough about the sort of the casual landscape in China, as the all the RPG games, strategy games, and shooters, they steal all the spotlight. But it's actually filled with really high quality products in subgenres as rhythm games, customization, interactive story, and even match three. And actually, there are some successful platform games as well. And these are all monetizing really well, and they are all in the top 100 grossing in China. And they have all the bells and whistles in terms of game features and content and live ops. And I think that, like, for example, when we in the West, when we usually discuss match three games, someone will always mention that they are, you know, it's a content treadmill, and the high cost of live ops is brought up. Well, that's not that much of an issue in China, obviously. And now, if we, you know, combine this expertise and resources that the Chinese developers have with the fact that the Chinese are really interested in tier one markets, and there's actually not that much Asian originated competition in many of the casual spaces in the West. So, for example, if you compare the situation to the Forex situation in Forex strategy situation in the West, and see these developers, for example, the one who is behind Project Makeover, actually can't remember the name now, but they've also been able to partner up with Western partners. So, for example, Project Makeover with AppLovin, for instance. And the end result is that you get games like these, so like Matching the Mansion and Project Makeover and Archer, which are super well optimized and clearly designed with the Western audience in mind. So I'm predicting that by the end of 2021, we will see at least one more Chinese originated casual game sustainably entering the top grossing 100. So this is just the beginning.
That's good. Predictions already. I was thinking we're going to have to save those till the end. your Philippines on that one. Yeah, it's kind of interesting that he I think, from my point of view, there's kind of two things here. There's one that you can, as you say, that you can always add more meta, but obviously at some point the kind of concept behind it kind of breaks apart because there's so many different things you're trying to kind of cram in there, and the user experience becomes kind of too fragmented. So there's a very difficult balancing act there. And I guess it's also interesting that Supercell, I guess the company most people think would be probably the best mobile game developer in the world, if such a title exists, had a go at match three and couldn't get it to work to their standards, which is not to say other companies shouldn't be making match three games, but Supercell has particular standards. I guess that kind of shows some sort of creative tension between kind of the pure design side of trying to make something, you know, new and really kind of groundbreaking, which is what Supercell obviously has kind of built its reputation on it. And then something else, which is how can we just kind of squeeze the last bit of juice out of it? And developers will take their own decision on that. Different developers have different kind of reputations and different kind of business models, I suppose. But it's kind of interesting that it's, those two things seem to encapsulate where we are with Match 3, which is quite a broad spectrum.
Yeah, definitely. And I agree on the Supercell stuff on that. But like Kalle mentioned, as Match 3 being a genre with the huge kind of like a content crush, and all the top games are releasing new levels on a daily basis. And one of the choices that Supercell made was this, they tried to like recycle the levels, and the whole loop was a bit different. And overall, if you look at Supercell and their kind of live ops is such a different compared to many other top companies, and they don't run events in a similar cadence than many other games and stuff like that. So that's why it was a bit surprising that they were tried to even go to Match 3, but at least to their high standards, it didn't work out as they wanted.
Okay, so moving from Match 3 to a very different sort of genre, kind of MMOs, so these very big, detailed, you know, kind of a persistent, immersive worlds of, I guess, kind of really blossomed over the last kind of decade or so on PC, and now we're seeing more of that going to mobile devices. How are we seeing that landscape? Because, you know, those are clearly, you know, very different games from a design point of view to Match 3, and very different, I guess, from a kind of development cost sort of landscape. Do we think there's going to be a lot of those that type of game coming out, or is it still just because they're so expensive that, you know, that's kind of, there's only so many that can ever be released?
Well, there's actually a couple of interesting games already coming out. I think we mentioned this in the last podcast as well, but Summoner's War Chronicles is one of them, and then we have Warhammer Odyssey. So really excited to see how what kind of games they are going to be, and how, what is their launch performance going to be. But like, as we all know, the MMO space traditionally, it has been really tough not to crack in the West, and like these games with their IPs, the IPs definitely can help in finding success. And especially I would say that the Summoner's War, having an IP originated having a mobile originated IP, as far as I know, it would be actually a very good that is a very good choice to you know, expand the IP to other mobile subgenres as well, and an MMO, I think it really does make sense. But like overall, I think in the West, if you think about these very very hardcore subgenres such as MMO, I guess one of the issues is that the players are so accustomed to play these games on PC. I think it's a similar kind of problem up to some extent with MOBA as well, that it has been a challenge to attract these players to play on mobile as well. And how to solve that problem, that's, I guess, is the big question. I think one approach that could be used is probably that there could be some sort of cross-platform approach, in a sense, the way that you know, Genshin Impact did, that they released the game on multiple different platforms. But for example, in China, like the games that I've seen, some of them are truly cross-platform, so that you can, you know, start playing on PC, and when you commute to work, you can use your mobile version to continue the progression on your mobile device. So use the platform that suits your current, you know, situation. And the mobile version, actually, it doesn't necessarily even have to, you know, include all the functions or features that the sort of mother version, or like the PC version has. So at least in China, some of the games that I've seen are like the mobile versions of those games, they are somewhat limited in features, that there are some aspects of the game that you can do on the mobile version, and then, for example, character progression. But then, for example, the core gameplay might be something that you have to do with PC. And speaking of Chinese MMOs, just want to mention real quick that I have to mention real quick a very big game that was launched in China some time ago. It's called Moonlight Blade. So published by Tencent, based on a PCIP, like many of the games in China. Also, there are some movies and novels based on the IP, but mainly based on the PC version. It's set in this Chinese martial arts universe. There are actually not that much fantasy or supernatural elements in the game. So if you've seen the movies Hero or Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, think of that kind of setting in a game. It's now sitting at top grossing 3, and it was even on top 1 position. And that's quite remarkable, taking in the fact that the Honor of Kings is, you know, it's the de facto top 1 crossing game in China. So it's quite rare that we see someone else taking that position. Currently, there's a lot of MMOs in this landscape. So maybe the question is, what is the big deal with this one? And the answer is that it is high fidelity. So I've analyzed tons of MMOs in the Chinese market in the last 4 years, and this is definitely the most ambitious ones in terms of audiovisual presentation. So animations, weather effects, lighting effects, they're all HD standard, and the customization options, they're just out of this world. And I just couldn't help but make a comparison to Genshin Impact as well. Even though the game mechanics-wise, Moonlight Blade is not doing that much innovative things, but just in terms of graphical fidelity, this is just an example of how ambitious games from China can be, and really bridging the gap between AAA HD console gaming and mobile.
I guess it's interesting because the decisions for these kind of games to be made was obviously made two or three years ago. So to kind of look back to see why people would be making those decisions kind of back then that mobile was the place to put these sort of things. I guess kind of equally, Summoner's War, as you point out, you know, is. It kind of makes sense for that to be on mobile devices because it is a Summoners Wars Chronicle, sorry, because Summoners Wars was a kind of a surprise hit RPG kind of hit on mobile. So again, that's been in the works for a few years. That kind of makes sense. I guess there is that kind of tension between the big massive world that you're going to spend hours playing in and it being on a mobile device. I guess we feel that more in the West, I imagine, than maybe some audiences in Asia. But I guess I don't know if anyone has any kind of views on kind of Eve Echoes, which is kind of like the mobile version of Eve Online. I mean, very much supposed to be like, I guess, a companion version, I suppose, to it. You know, obviously it's not trying to do the same thing as Eve Online. That doesn't seem to have probably captured the imagination, I don't think, in the same way. And I guess that kind of shows some of the downsides of trying to fit these massive worlds into, you know, what physically at least are quite small screens. And maybe that's where the disconnect is on those.
Yeah, I totally agree. At least in the West, it seems to be a big issue for Western players.
Yeah, in a way, I totally agree on that. And I feel it, for example, personally, when I play at my leisure time, that's one of the things. When I like immerse myself in a big world, I prefer big screens and stuff like that. But to be kind of like, highlight Genshin Impact here as an example of something, a game that kind of like was a disruptor in the market in that sense. Because, for example, action RPGs in the West, there wasn't really any successful action RPGs on mobile on the West. Well, really successful. So like there was barely any of them in Top Crossing 200, for example. And now Genshin Impact came with its model of being this kind of like a AAA experience with the free-to-play meta, basically, and lot of focus on the core gameplay. And now it basically found a way to be successful on mobile on action RPGs. And if we look at the MMORPGs on mobile, Wilhelm has played more of them on the Western markets, but most of those don't have the same fidelity and focus on the core gameplay as, let's say, PC MMOs do.
Yeah, that's a really good point from Erno. If we, for example, of course, if we compare China to West in terms of MMORPGs, MMORPGs are probably way easier to bring to China. But I'd say they're like the biggest problem in terms of Western MMORPGs has definitely been that, of course, they are not as core gameplay focused as, for example, Genshin Impact is. And I think they have been a bit too complex in terms of, if you look at the UI design and so on, there's a bit too much stuff. And I think, for example, if we look at Sumeru's War Chronicles, if they are able to focus on the core gameplay as well as Genshin Impact, I think they can really sort of bring or make the Genshin Impact of MMORPGs and actually make a top crossing MMORPG in the West as well. Yeah.
Good. So moving on through the genres, and I notice in my notes here, I know people don't believe I have notes, but going to talk about the shooter genre, which apparently I'm told is not too saturated, which is which is a surprise to me. Actually, technically, it says obviously there's Call of Duty Mobile, which has kind of run everything before it for the last kind of year and a half. Obviously, there's still kind of Battle Royale further back in time. What do we think about the genre, the shooter genre, which has taken a long time to be successful on mobile? There's been, you know, really a decade of failed attempts or attempts that didn't go, you know, as massive as shooters have been on every other gaming device. Going back to even to like Match 3 has seen a lot of kind of innovation around kind of meta. Do we think that the shooter genre has a lot more to give in terms of the meta? Because it's, I mean, the gameplay, we all know what the gameplay is. We all, I guess, kind of, if we love the gameplay, we love shooters. But there doesn't seem to be that much around the meta, I suppose, kind of, you know, after Battle Royale, that was a pretty big change of meta. Where's that going this year, do we think?
Yeah, I can start. So, so of course, like you mentioned, there are the big boys in the market nowadays. So there's the Call of Duty, there's the PUBG. They are kind of like very, very dominant on that competitive battle royale kind of like a type of gameplay in shooter genre. But we can also look at the shooter kind of like a genre in a little bit bigger scope. So I agree on that if you would make a, let's say, battle royale game with a cosmetic meta with basically same kind of gameplay as trying to make a, let's say, a military shooter with a cosmetic meta, for example, it might be quite difficult to kind of like enter the market and actually get market share from those big boys. But we have to think about shooters as a little bit bigger, kind of like in like a bigger picture. So one of the good examples is, of course, now, especially when Epic and Apple have their fight going on, Lilith actually announced their new shooter game, which is kind of like it has this bit kind of like a mix of themes, a little bit of cyberpunk, little bit of this cartoonish Fortnite style gameplay, stuff like that. I think that is, for example, one shooter that I'm personally following really, really closely. That, well, we don't know too much about the actual gameplay loop of the game and what kind of, does it have a, let's say, power progression meta, or is it purely cosmetic, or what's the game like even? But based on the like the initial things that we have seen and knowing Lilith as a company, how much production value they put into their products, it's gonna be a really, really interesting shooter to follow, that how it actually is able to compete in the current market situation and a current competitive landscape, especially when Fortnite is out of the picture on mobile currently.
I would definitely agree with Erno on the Lilith's new shooter. Was it Farlight 84? What was the name again? Yeah, something like that. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of, as Erno said, we don't know much about the game as of yet, but it's going to be interesting to see what kind of elements in the meta side of things they're going to use to differentiate themselves. But what we do know is that, the developer is Lilith, and they've always had something exciting up in their sleeves. So adding interesting twists to existing genre formulas. So, for example, with AFK Arena, we had the idling layer. They added that to the RPG. Then Art of Conquest is a very interesting mixture of build and battle and MMO elements and so on. So I'm definitely positive on this game being something interesting. Now, zooming out a little bit, again, just giving you guys my China take on things. A couple of words on Battle Royale in general. Just this is a little bit anecdotal, perhaps, but just something that I've been thinking about for the last year at least, and noticing in the market is that, like, if we think about pure Battle Royale experiences, it actually hasn't been that exciting in China. So we haven't had new entrants to the top 200 crossing. Game for Peace, which is the PUBG in China, it has 98% revenue market share in the top 500 crossing in China. So that might be one reason why no one is trying to threaten Game for Peace. The second one is Knives Out, which has less than 1% revenue market share. And the other games are just, you know, curiosity. And like when you open up the nowadays these battle royale games or like shooter games in general that just have, you know, battle royale modes, what you can see is that the battle royale modes, they are not anymore in the, you know, in the front UI. When you open up the game, there's going to be pop-up messages directing you that, you know, you just have to, you know, try out the battle royale mode. Nowadays, they are, you know, the battle royale modes are often hidden in, you know, in submenus of submenus. So you actually have to know how to, you know, navigate yourself to play those battle royale modes. So that has been an interesting thing. And I think, like, even in the West, you know, we've been talking about Fortnite, for example, doing the metaverse stuff and having other stuff in the game, not just a pure BR battle royale experience. And I think that this might be the same thing that we're talking about, the same thing that at least some of the players have at least up to some extent gotten over battle royale and now seeking other kinds of experiences from these kinds of games.
Yeah, definitely. I would like to add that, of course, coming from Tencent, but for example, PUBG Mobile in the West also, they just added the Metro Royale mode, which is it has elements from Battle Royale, but it's not a pure Battle Royale game anymore. And they are bringing more and more these kind of things that actually kind of like a widen or actually go away from the classic Battle Royale. So if you talk about just the pure Battle Royale games, like let's say Apex Legends is still coming, the mobile game, being quite a basic Battle Royale experience. Of course, with the twist of the gameplay is a bit different and stuff like that. But still, I assume it's going to have a tough time to kind of like get market share in the current situation.
In some ways, I'm sure this is just my view, that it was always amazing that Battle Royale lasted so long. In some ways, it was hard to come up with a mechanic that put more people off than 100 of you float down to an island and you're all going to get killed. Most of you are going to get killed quite early on, and the game's going to last for, you know, in some ways you couldn't. I mean, the surprise of it was kind of how anti you wouldn't come up with it in a logical way, and that was probably the surprise of it. So maybe we should be looking for those really kind of left of center sort of weird ways of where the developer just kind of pushes through. We're kind of coming to the end. There was one last thing that you actually just mentioned just there, and it's kind of an interesting one that's kind of bubbling under. So maybe we come back to it in more detail in another podcast. But we have this idea of now of kind of hangout areas or kind of social areas, which have always been kind of part of gaming. I remember people always talking about, you know, people talk more in Quake lobbies than they do, you know, playing the game. So I guess that kind of social element has always been in games. But now we're seeing it more becoming a more prominent part, I guess. How do we see that one playing out? Because I guess also it has different ramifications globally in different cultures as well.
Yeah. So in the West, and especially in China, we have seen these different ways that games have tried to find interesting, compelling, exciting content for players to come back to the game and basically just, you know, spend time inside the game. And obviously they can play the sort of the core gameplay. So if it's a battle royale game, they go play the battle royale shooting experience. Or if it's a music game, they go play the rhythm core gameplay. But on top of that and on the side, we've seen that games have added these different kinds of game modes, different kinds of spaces, instances where people can interact with each other, hang out, just have a good time. And just to name a couple of games in the China side of things, I'm sure Erno and Wilhelm can talk about the West, but in China, games like Audition Online, QQ Dancer, QQ Speed, and Outer World, for example, have been experiencing with these kind of spaces where you can just go, chill out, hang out with friends, show off cosmetics, play mini games, do some sort of quizzes, listen to music, watch different kinds of videos, movies. And of course, games have been very clever to utilize these kinds of modes and combine that with live ops to create unique events, such as, you know, like limited time concerts, for example. So you say that like on this date, we will have this artist playing a gig in this game, and then people have a very compelling reason to come to listen to that concert that happens inside the game. And one like specific example that I haven't mentioned yet that comes to my mind is actually from Japan. There's a game called Project Sekai Colorful Stage featuring Hatsune Miku. Quite a mouthful. The game, it's a rhythm game. So it's a rhythm game, but they have this mode called Virtual Life, which is sort of like an immersive type of live event. So players enter this virtual stadium as an avatar, and they can enjoy just the concert that happens there. The movement in that mode is unrestricted, and then the players can, you know, they can throw a wide variety of effects to the stage, including chat messages. They can send these effects to cheer the performers and send emotes and stuff like that. And it's a big part of the game experience nowadays. So that was a very interesting one that one of our Japan analysts brought up.
I think, well, of course, we have seen in this year, as Kalle mentioned, these hangout arenas have definitely been trending in China. Right now, not as much in the Western games, but we have seen already. Well, first of all, I'm really expecting in 2021 that these become even more popular in the US as well. We have seen huge games like PUBG. COD Mobile had its anniversary event where there was a hangout area. Erno can probably talk about that more. And of course, we have Roblox for example, its live concerts as well in 2020, we have seen a lot of live concerts in games like Fortnite, Minecraft. And for example, the Roblox really recently had its Lil Nas X and Roblox concert experience event, and it was basically like as in Roblox, you have, it's basically a huge platform of multiple games. So there was a new game, sort of hangout area game created there, where players can hang out with each other, and so it's sort of this concert area, and in the area during a certain time, it was few concerts during the certain weekend, where Lil Nas X actually did a live performance, and for example, performed his or did a worldwide premiere actually on his new single called Holiday, and it was actually reported that it drew 23 million attendees, and sort of this kind of events, they are really a really good potential for both of the game and also on the artist. For example, it brings so good visibility for the artist. And of course, if we also think about sort of them, if we go back to the hangout areas and we think about, for example, this, there has been decoration meta elements trending as well, which is, first of all, really good way to monetize in the games, and it's really player friendly way to monetize. And of course, if you have this hang around area and where you can show off your avatars to other players, it's also a really good way to incentivize players collecting more decorative items for their avatars, and so on.
Yeah, and I would like to add still on that what we have also seen as a trend together that works with this kind of like a element of having these hangar-on arenas. We have seen these different brands and so on, and also, of course, different artists and stuff like that doing collaboration events with these games that have these possibilities and getting visibility to their product and their kind of like, let's say, new movies or some other brands, even like clothes brands and stuff like that, and getting visibility, like, for example, having clothes. Casual sports games called Tennis Clash from Wildlife Studios. They had, for example, Gucci collaboration, and you could highlight your Gucci clothes there and then kind of like do marketing in that kind of like a new way of collaborating with a mobile game.
What do you guys think that when the COVID goes away, are we still going to see these virtual concerts and stuff like that? Or is this just a very unique thing for this time period that we are living in right now? Because I'm not sure.
Personally, if I think, for example, if you look at the Lil Nas X event in the Roblox, it drew 33 million attendees. If you compare to of course, live concert is always a live concert. It's different kind of experience. But if we're just talking about visibility, if the artist, for example, releases a new single, you get way more visibility through having a live concert in a game like Roblox. So I'd say that is definitely going to be, in my opinion, we are going to be seeing more and more of these concerts going, for example, in operating mobile games.
Yeah, I agree also that, of course, like anything at the moment or anything happening this year, it can be hard to compare than like normal stuff. But still, I think the huge popularity of these things and overall that where the trend is going, I think it's going to be a new part definitely, and they're not going away anymore, but they're kind of like the scale and the volume of those things, it's going to be left to seen. But
yes, I think we've ended up where we started discussing how this year is going to be different to next year. And I think, you know, as you pointed out, we now have these kind of these gaming kind of experiences, which have now very big audiences. Whether they can kind of continue that very big growth of tens of millions of people, we'll wait and see. But I guess like with all new innovation, we'll start seeing any game that thinks they can do these sort of events, and some games that maybe can't will be attempting to do it. So it will just become something now that game designers and game operators will be looking, you know, what does my audience want? What kind of artists or what kind of creators can I get into my game to drive these kind of you know, simultaneous kind of events, which will provide lots of fascinating podcasts, I think, for us in the next year. So just like to say thanks to Wilhelm, Calle and Erno.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to you listeners for listening. We are available on all the usual podcast channels, so please do subscribe. Every month we are delving deep into the world of mobile games, now the biggest part of the gaming industry and the fastest growing, still despite that. And we're digging into what's going on, the trends, the design, decisions that are being made, and we hope you enjoy it. Maybe give us some feedback. That'd be a good start to the year. But thanks for listening, and come back next month.